Challenge Cyber Defense.
The cyber threat analyses you need to know about. Cyber Decryption. It's now.
This July breaking news is brought to you by the Cyber Intelligence Bureau, a division of the Epidemiology Lab at Orange Cyber Defense. The data is based on collected and cross-analyzed discussions from various hacktivist groups on Telegram channels. Here is our analysis of investigations. In a context of geopolitical tensions, this synthesis reviews hacktivist campaigns from July 2026, their targets, and operational methods.
Which, I have to say, is a very formal, precise way of saying that we're about to look directly at raw, real-time data streaming straight from the digital front lines.
Yeah. Exactly. And we are thrilled to have you with us for this deep dive today. If you're tuning in, you can kind of think of this as a highly efficient briefing built entirely on OSINT, so open source intelligence.
Right. And so to me, Andy, too.
Yeah. Social media intelligence. We aren't, you know, relying on rumors or secondary reporting here. We are looking directly at what these threat actors are saying, what they're doing, and honestly, what they're selling in their own public or semi-public Telegram channels.
Which is a gold mine of data, really.
Yeah. It totally is. But before we get into the actual mechanics of this, I want to make our mission today crystal clear for you listening. Our goal is to analyze these cyber origin sources with total neutrality. We are purely observing the digital fallout of real-world conflicts. We are not taking any political sides, period. We are just here to decode the beta.
And that neutrality is just so vital, especially because the data itself is, well, it's heavily politicized by the actors creating it.
Right. Okay, let's unpack this, because when you look at the broad strokes of this Telegram chatter, what stands out first?
I mean, the first thing that becomes undeniably clear is that the cyber landscape in July 2026 is it's entirely dictated by physical, real-world geopolitical fault lines. The digital space is basically holding up a mirror to physical borders.
Right. The primary driver in the data is obviously the ongoing Russia-Ukraine conflict, which seems to have just completely spilled over at this point. But when I was looking through the sources, I noticed it's not just contained to Eastern Europe anymore. It looks like a sustained digital proxy war targeting NATO and the European Union at large.
Yeah, it has absolutely metastasized. Mm-hmm. And it's not just Europe either. We're seeing a secondary, highly volatile front that mirrors Middle Eastern tensions.
Oh, wow. Like where?
Well, the data shows groups explicitly targeting Israeli financial and government infrastructure. So we're seeing hits on the Discount Bank, Mercantile Bank, the Ministry of Education, even portals linked to the Shin Bet Intelligence Agency. And simultaneously, we see Egyptian targets like Cairo Airport and various ministries being hit due to their specific geopolitical stances. Mm-hmm. The physical conflict is literally generating the digital target list.
Okay, I have a theory about this, but I want you to tell me if I'm like totally misinterpreting the dynamic here.
Sure, go ahead.
When I read through how these groups operate, it reminded me of the 16th century. Are these hacktivist groups essentially operating as digital privateers?
Oh, that's an interesting way to put it.
Like, you know, uncertificated militias that are given a wink and a nod to sail the internet, harassing rival nations on behalf of their home countries, just without officially wearing the uniform.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, the privateer analogy is mechanically very accurate. Mm-hmm. From a strict cybersecurity perspective, the historical line between an official state advanced persistent threat, an APT,
right,
and an independent patriot hacker has completely dissolved.
But does that distinction even matter to the victim anymore? Like, if a hospital goes offline, who cares if it was a military intelligence officer or just some teenager in a basement?
That's exactly the point. The impact on the target is identical. Oh. The Telegram data reveals this decentralized ecosystem that provides plausible deniability for the state.
Ah, of course. Plausible deniability.
Right. Whether they receive quiet funding from intelligence agencies or whether they are just genuinely independent citizens acting out of ideological fervor, they function as a highly effective deniable wing of national power.
Which brings us to the country that took an absolute hammering in the data this month.
Yeah.
France.
Yeah. According to the hacktivists' own shared statistics, and they frequently cited an agency called Hackmanac to brag about their numbers, France topped the list of targeted countries globally. We're talking 64 distinct major attacks in just 1 month. Why is France suddenly the bullseye?
Well, the hacktivists are very explicit about their motivation in their Telegram posts. They state it is direct retaliation for France's continued military and political support for Ukraine.
They just come right out and say it.
They do. They aren't trying to hide the why. What's strategically interesting is the what. they are going far beyond the traditional playbook of just, you know, defacing a government homepage.
Right.
They are targeting the critical economic and logistical arteries of the nation.
Yeah. The sources name some massive corporate and infrastructure targets. I mean, major logistics firms like Geodis had their corporate portals and courier management systems attacked.
Huge disruption there.
And energy giants like EDF, the French Banking Federation. Aviation infrastructure, specifically Dinard Airport. They even went after municipal public transport, hitting the EVOD network in Evian-les-Bains.
And if you look at that target list, the goal is clear, right? They are trying to induce friction.
Friction, yeah.
They want logistical gridlock. They want everyday citizens to feel the disruption in their daily commute, in their banking, in their package deliveries.
But here is where the data gets incredibly bizarre to me. Alongside hitting giant energy conglomerates, there was this massive shift toward micro-targets.
Oh, the villas.
Yes. They literally took over the smart irrigation systems of private French villas. They were posting screenshots on Telegram, bragging about having control over the sprinklers for some wealthy citizen's terrace, lawn, and vegetable garden.
It seems almost comical, I know. But mechanically, it's a very calculated psychological tactic.
But why a sprinkler? That seems so, I don't know, petty compared to taking down a national bank.
Because it demonstrates inescapable reach. It sends a message to the civilian population that says, we are just a threat to your government institutions. We are quite literally inside your backyard.
Wow. Okay, that is creepy.
Right. They accompany these posts with heavy rhetoric, mocking the bourgeoisie, basically claiming that while French citizens drink wine in their villas, foreign actors control their homes.
Which, just as a quick neutrality reminder for you listening, we are analyzing this rhetoric purely to understand their psychological strategy. We are examining how they use class warfare narratives to amplify their hacks. We are absolutely not endorsing those viewpoints.
Of course not. It's just data.
Right. But I want to understand the logistics of this. Who exactly are these privateers pulling the strings? Because when you read the Telegram chatter, a few very loud voices seem to dominate the room.
They do. The threat landscape right now is heavily populated by Russian-aligned groups. The most prolific actor in this specific data set is a group called No Name 05716.
Okay, No Name 05716.
Yeah. They are highly organized, incredibly vocal, and just relentless. Another major player operating alongside them is the Dark Storm team.
But it's not a monolith, right? Because I saw mentions of a much wider ecosystem. Groups with names like Shadow Claws 404, and even geographically distinct groups like Cyber Team Indonesia.
Yes, exactly.
And what surprised me most is that they aren't working in silos. Cyber Team Indonesia publicly thanked No Name 05716 and Dark Storm Team during their joint attacks on French airports.
And that public gratitude is a crucial piece of Saucy PT. It tells us we aren't dealing with isolated gangs and basements, we are looking at a highly organized, decentralized syndicate.
Wait, challenge that for a second. If they are highly decentralized and scattered across the globe, I mean, from Russia to Indonesia, how are they coordinating complex strikes on a French airport so seamlessly?
It's a fair question.
That level of synchronization usually requires, like, a corporate hierarchy, doesn't it?
You would think so. But they achieve it by operating exactly like an agile, open source software project. They form temporary operational alliances.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. So one group might have developed a new piece of malware, while another group controls a massive botnet of infected devices, and a third group handles the Telegram propaganda.
Wow. Specialization.
Exactly. They share resources, they distribute target lists via encrypted channels, and they coordinate simultaneous strikes to completely overwhelm a target's incident response team.
So mechanically, how are they actually pulling this off? Because taking down a logistics giant like Geodis is a totally different beast than hacking a villa's sprinkler system.
It is. The methods primarily break down into two distinct vectors.
Okay.
The first, and most common, is the brute force distributed denial of service, or DDoS attack.
Yeah.
Exactly. This is where they flood a target servers with so much junk internet traffic that the system simply collapses under the weight. They use this against transport networks, government portals, defense contractors. For instance, the data shows them heavily utilizing DDoS against ThyssenKrupp Marine Systems, which is a major submarine manufacturer in Germany.
But let me jump in here, because DDoS is basically the oldest trick in the hacker playbook. It's essentially organizing a digital flash mob.
Pretty much.
It's like sending 100,000 people to squeeze through the single front door of a local library at the exact same time, preventing the actual librarian from getting inside.
That is a fantastic analogy.
Thanks. But if these groups are so sophisticated, why are they using such a blunt, noisy instrument instead of quiet, targeted espionage malware?
The answer is that they want the noise. Yeah, espionage malware is designed to steal data quietly over months. Hacktivism is about public relations. A DDoS attack is highly visible. When a citizen can't load their banking app or check their flight status, the hacktivist has instantly proven their capability. It's all about immediate, undeniable disruption.
Okay, that makes sense for websites. Here's where it gets really interesting, though. The second vector, this is the one that genuinely terrified me in the reading.
The IoT stuff.
Yes, the exploitation of unsecured IoT, the Internet of Things, and SCADA systems. And for anyone unfamiliar, SCADA refers to the industrial control systems that manage physical machinery in factories and power plants.
Yes, and this is where the threat model shifts from digital inconvenience to actual physical danger. They aren't just taking a website offline, they are taking control of physical hardware.
The examples in the sources are wild. They accessed the Alaska biomass burner control systems at an industrial facility in Germany. They had full administrative control over the combustion chamber, the temperatures, the emergency alarms. The system interface literally flashed a warning in German saying, "Your installation is no longer protected."
It's terrifying.
And in France, they compromised Siemens Sinumeric CNC systems. These are incredibly advanced multi-axis machining centers in manufacturing plants, and they locked the spindles.
And perhaps the most alarming example in this data set was the Georgetown water system in Canada.
Oh, man, yeah.
It's a municipal water pumping station. The hackers infiltrated the control panel and were able to watch the pumps failing to start while emergency alarms triggered in the background.
But how, like, I understand a website going down, but how does a hacker on Telegram reach across the ocean and manipulate a physical water pump in Canada or a factory burner in Germany? What is the actual mechanism there?
It almost always comes down to a fundamental failure in basic network architecture. Often, these critical systems lack enterprise-grade security. Yeah, facility managers want the convenience of monitoring a water pump or a factory floor remotely, you know, from their home office or their phone.
Right, convenience over security.
Exactly. So they plug the PLC, the programmable logic controller, directly into a standard internet router. They don't place it behind a secure VPN. Worse, they often leave the default manufacturer passwords in place, like admin and admin.
Are you kidding? So the hackers don't even need to be coding geniuses. They just use search engines like Shodan, which constantly scans the internet for exposed devices, find a Siemens machine or a water pump with an open port, and just type in the default password.
That's it.
It's like installing a massive bank vault door, but leaving the physical key resting on the welcome mat.
Precisely. The sophisticated part isn't the hack itself. It's the automated scanning infrastructure they use to hunt for those open doors at a global scale.
And speaking of a global scale, this campaign swept far beyond France. Let's look at the broader map of European cyber attacks. Germany took a massive beating this month.
They did. Germany was targeted with a very specific vindictive focus. Much of it was timed around the anniversary of what the hackers refer to as Operation Eastwood.
Operation Eastwood?
Yes.
Right.
This was a real German police operation aimed at taking down infrastructure used by groups like No Name 05716. The operation ultimately failed to permanently stop them. And now the hackers use the anniversary to actively humiliate German intelligence.
Right. They were compromising targets and explicitly posting messages on Telegram saying, "Happy Eastwood."
It's pure taunting.
They hit the port of Kiel, actively disrupting passenger and cruise management systems. They hit regional transport networks like the Hanover S-Bahn and multiple state government public procurement platforms. They were basically turning a police operations anniversary into a digital holiday.
And the scope of their campaigns adapts to each country, too. Like, in Spain, we saw Operation Domino, which was highly multifaceted.
Yeah, tell us about that.
Well, on the intelligence side, they exposed the personal data of over 400 alleged Spanish spies, referencing a group they called APT-DESI, claiming these individuals were cooperating with Ukraine. But on the civilian side, they hijacked thousands of CCTV cameras.
The CCTV hacks in Spain were incredibly invasive. They were posting live screenshots from inside clothing stores, from state lottery box offices, and even from the private living rooms and smart homes of Spanish citizens.
Truly chilling.
But again, how do you hijack thousands of cameras simultaneously? Is there like a master key?
In a way, yes. It goes back to what we discussed about IoT vulnerabilities. Mm-hmm. Many of these cameras are cheap, white-label hardware manufactured with identical, hard-coded firmware flaws.
Oh, so they're all basically identical on the inside.
Exactly. If a hacker writes a script to exploit a vulnerability in one camera, that same script can automatically compromise thousands of identical cameras across the country in minutes. They use this access to specifically mock the budget nature of the security, basically telling the Spanish public, your government sends millions to Ukraine, but secures your homes with cheap, hackable cameras.
The psychological layering there is intense. And we saw a similar direct causality in Romania. The attacks there targeted the National Company of Railway Passenger Transport and the Romanian Senate website. The hackers explicitly stated this was a direct response to Bucharest, announcing they were allocating 38 million euros in monthly financial aid to Ukraine. Every digital action has a stated physical catalyst.
Which brings us to a fascinating point about their overall operational tactics and methods.
Mm-hmm.
When you analyze these Telegram channels, you realize that the actual cyber attack is only half of the operation. The other half is purely public relations.
It really is a psyop, isn't it?
Entirely. The Telegram channels function as their broadcast network. When they take down a target using a DDoS attack, they don't just announce it, they immediately post live checkhost links.
For those who might not know, what exactly does a checkhost link do?
Checkhost is a legitimate network tool used by web developers. If you put a website's address into it, it pings that website from dozens of servers located all around the world, Japan, the US, Germany, to see if the site is reachable.
Okay, so it checks its pulse globally.
Exactly. The hackers post these links so their followers, the victims, and journalists can click them and watch in real time as every global server reports that the target website is dead. It provides instant, undeniable third-party proof of their destructive power.
It's a performance.
It really is.
But there's also a very dark, deeply capitalist side to this that blew my mind in the sources. The rampant commercialization within these Telegram channels is staggering. We aren't just looking at ideologues. Groups like Chemist Plus and Dark Storm Team are openly selling hacktivism as a service.
What's fascinating here is, well, deeply concerning, really, is that they operate exactly like legitimate software as a service or SaaS businesses.
Yeah.
They have slick graphics, price lists, and tiered subscription models.
Right.
The data shows them offering a targeted DDoS attack starting at $20 for 3 hours of disruption.
$20.
Yep. You can buy a whole day for $100 or launch a sustained month-long attack for $600. They're selling stolen database dumps starting at $50.
I even saw discount codes in the data. Like, I saw a post offering a 50% summer discount until July 30th.
Surreal.
But hold on. If they are operating like a public business, complete with customer support bots, how are they not immediately tracked and arrested?
Because the transactions are entirely decoupled from traditional banking. Payment is strictly in cryptocurrency, which is laundered through decentralized tumblers, and the infrastructure itself is hosted on bulletproof servers in jurisdictions that simply ignore Western law enforcement requests.
Wow.
They even have affiliate reseller programs now. If you invite a buyer to their Telegram channel, you get a commission in crypto. They have successfully monetized geopolitical chaos.
And the geopolitical danger there is massive because that commercialization completely lowers the barrier to entry for cyber warfare. You no longer need to know how to write a line of code to launch a devastating attack on a NATO country's municipal government. You just need $20 in Bitcoin and a Telegram account. You can essentially rent a digital weapon.
Exactly. The democratization of cyber attack capabilities means the threat actor could be a state intelligence agency, or it could simply be a frustrated individual who bought a subscription.
So what does this all mean? Let's try to get into their heads a bit deeper here. Based on all this data, what inferences can we make regarding their motivation and psychological profiling?
If you do a sentiment analysis of their messaging, the overriding tone is extreme sarcasm and weaponized irony. They view themselves very clearly as digital patriots.
Right.
In their own narrative, they are the righteous underdogs fighting against what they perceive as a hypocritical and corrupt Western hegemony.
The hypocrisy narrative is a massive tiller for them. The recurring theme in almost every post is mocking European nations' spending priorities. They post things like, you spend billions on the Kyiv project, or they heavily mock the European Union's Green Deal initiatives.
Right. They compromise a solar panel monitoring system in Poland or a biomass burner in Germany, and they post, is this your vaunted green energy? It's wide open.
It's a rhetorical weapon.
Yes. They use the hacks as rhetorical devices to try and prove that Western governments are incompetent, arguing that these states care more about funding foreign wars or environmental projects than they do about securing their own domestic infrastructure.
So here's my theory, and I want to know if the data supports this. Is the ultimate goal of this psychological warfare actually designed to make European citizens lose faith in their own government's ability to protect them, like erode the social contract from the inside out?
Without a doubt. The data strongly supports that inference. When a citizen sees that a foreign entity can seamlessly turn off their local water pump, look through the security camera at their neighborhood clothing store, or shut down the public transit schedule, it creates a visceral, localized sense of vulnerability.
Because it's happening right in their neighborhood.
Exactly. The ultimate goal isn't just to disrupt a server, it is to breed domestic resentment. They want the citizen to turn to their government and say, "Why are we funding a war abroad when you can't even keep the sprinklers in my town safe?"
Which brings us to the conclusion of our analysis of contemporary cyber activity. If we synthesize everything we've pulled from this July 2026 data, where exactly do we stand?
The primary takeaway is a paradox of accessibility and vulnerability. Contemporary cyber activity is now inextricably enmeshed with geopolitical warfare. But, crucially, the barrier to entry for causing national-level disruption has lowered dramatically due to cheap, commercialized DDoS and hacking services.
The $20 attack.
Right. And simultaneously, our attack surface has widened exponentially. Because society continues to eagerly digitize and connect unsecured smart infrastructure, I mean, everything from massive industrial SCADA systems down to private home automation, we are essentially handing these decentralized privateers millions of unlocked doors.
It is an incredibly volatile mix of physical machinery and digital accessibility. Well, I want to thank you, the listener, for joining us on this deep dive. We hope you feel equipped with this vital OSINT and SOCMINT analysis straight from the raw data, helping you understand not just what is happening, but how and why it's happening. But before we wrap up, I want to leave you with a final thought to mull over. We've talked extensively today about how the lines of warfare have completely blurred.
The total dissolution of the digital border.
Right. Well, if hostile actors, whether they are state-sponsored operatives, decentralized privateers, or just teenagers with $20 in crypto, can now seamlessly reach across international borders to turn off a town's water pumps, hijack a factory's furnace, or casually look through the cameras of a local clothing store, all in the name of a foreign war. Sorry, I shouldn't say foreign war, but in the name of a distant conflict. Does the concept of a civilian non-combatant even exist anymore in the digital age, or are we all just unknowingly sitting on the front line?
The cyber threat analyses you need to know about. Cyber decryption. We'll be talking about it on this channel very soon.
Orange Cyber Defense.